Moody's Analytics will host its second annual Ag Day virtual conference dedicated to the discussion of agriculture. Ag lending professionals come together for 2 days of peer sharing, best practice concepts, and critical insight into agriculture's road ahead. Learn more at moodysanalytics.com/Moody's Ag Day 2021.
Welcome to the MTOM Show podcast. I'm Paul Yeager, back in a studio of sorts. Joining me today, Colleen Bradford-Krantz. Hello, Colleen.
Hi there.
We are experimenting, and Colleen's always willing to be an experimenter.
Guinea pig.
Guinea pig, that's probably better. We're back in the building. We've been in the building for other interviews, but Zoom is so easy. Have you found Zoom to be easy for doing some of the interviews?
Yeah, I've liked it, except for I have, if I had to do them at home, I have bad service. So it's, the glitches weren't great, but otherwise, yes.
But it allows you to go places without having to get into the car.
Yeah. And in fact, it's been great because during COVID, you know, it's not ideal because you'd rather be in person, but I do think there was a lot of benefit to quickly being able to reach somebody in Montana or California or, you know, wherever and get that a little more variety of interviews that we can't just immediately travel to get.
Now, this room was one that we used before pandemic for audio recordings. We would sit in here and chat. But given that we've kind of moved everything over to video, we've gone and moved in some cameras and some backdrops. Some of the stuff that we had already, but we actually put lights in and we're trying to even it up. So
it's looking pretty stylish in here.
I guess if you've got comments, I've been listening to podcasts lately. Do you listen to them beg for comments and likes and shares and that type of thing?
I think there's an art to it, so you don't notice they're begging.
So if I say, if I say your comments mean a lot to us, but we might not read them, is that not subtle?
Get a little tear in your eye. You
know? I feel like I'm pledging. If you value this podcast, please leave a comment in the comments below. But what we really want to do is just you know, hear what you have to say about it, and we enjoy the wide topics. Now, when this podcast started 5 years ago, it was mostly the behind-the-scenes stories, and we always are talking with Colleen. This is no exception. You have been, I think we talked earlier in 2021, you've done a lot of stories, you've been traveling. What's the one, we have one coming up on this week's show, which one is it?
So this, and I think it'll be the show right before this comes out, right? But it's about data, using data to track plant threats more carefully. It's, you know, whether that's insects or plant diseases. And it really is a story about what plant protection and quarantine, which is part of USDA, does with these new tools.
Now, peripherally, can you see me smile and nod?
A little bit,
Yeah, because we're actually experimenting again where we look in all of this. Yeah. The insect story is always interesting. Dicamba was something you covered a lot. Is there any similarities between seeds and insects? They're both tiny and can both spread in a hurry. Is that like where the end of the line is on how a little thing can cause big problems?
I think that's actually a decent analogy because and that's kind of what they do with this program, or even bacteria, you know, like plant bacteria that can be serious for the producers of, you know, whether it's greenhouse or whatever. So yeah, it's like these tiny threats that people don't always take seriously. And I feel like I've done a number of stories on these somehow. I don't know why.
On tiny things or insects?
Insects, okay. Tiny things in general, maybe. Living things, I don't know.
And this is a repeat of a story. Where did you go for it?
So this one was, I had done through Zoom actually. So the interviews were in Virginia, I believe, if I remember right. In Maryland, we had some interviews. And that was a case where it was as COVID was starting and there was no more option. I had planned to travel to the story and it was not an option. So it worked out nice because they also could, in this case, the story, they could demonstrate their what they call dashboards. So Zoom was actually kind of a nice way to capture some of those video demonstrations of the mapping tools they have where they can track whether it's grasshoppers or, you know, whatever insect threats happening and sort of decide where to put money to help states.
So you had them demonstrate something on their computer and, like, share their screen, and you got video that way? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and it worked out really nicely, you know, to just screen capture that. And so then I could put it on the story so viewers can see what that looks like.
Okay. That's insects we will see this week on the program. There's another story You just had something, I think we reran, was it brucellosis?
Yeah, we did do a brucellosis story, and that was also a repeat story. We're looking at how this, how brucellosis, which is a disease that can cause livestock to lose their, to abort, basically lose their calves. Livestock can lose them, but it has been, pretty much had been eliminated and then reappeared through exposure to wildlife. So it's kind of complicated to explain quickly, but basically looking at how they're trying to solve the problem in wildlife and whether there's a vaccine. But there's some barriers because of it being seen as a dangerous agent, I guess. So that was a repeat. And then there were a couple other newer stories, if you want to.
And you're working on, you mean newer stories you're working
well,
on?
Well, the recent ones, the rabies one that came out, okay. And the labor story, which we, I don't know if we had a chance to talk about either of those.
We haven't had a chance to talk to about either one. So let's start with rabies. And that was on the list of what I thought we would talk about. Rabies is... I always admire how you will ask a question of, do you think it'd be okay if I try? You're always experimenting. Could you expand upon what you wanted to try in the beginning of this rabies story?
So I wanted to portray how we as a society have sort of viewed rabies as a disease threat and wanted to do that using some pop culture. So I found this great 1970s movie that I don't really know how widespread it was at the time, but I think it was called Rabid, to give them credit. And I wanted to use some scenes from there, demonstrating how it was sort of the story of if it went into humans, what would it look like? Just to, again, portray how we view rabies in our culture. And yeah, that got nixed once Dave Miller, our executive producer, took a look at the video. And I started thinking of small children watching, you know, Market to Market at home with their parents and maybe not needing to see these semi-horror movie scenes.
Okay, so horror movies is one thing, and that would be with the foaming of the mouth and almost walking like a zombie, too?
Yeah, it was a lot like that. There was a scene on a subway inside a train when they're all in the subway, and whoever has rabies is, you know, attacking everyone in there. So yeah, that was probably the right call to, you know, hold off. But we did get to put in some fun and sound effects that they used and a few pieces of it that were safer.
Now, what I wanted to use was the MASH episode where Radar O'Reilly was bit by a dog and had rabies. And he laid down in his cot for quite a while. And is that more an accurate reflection of what might happen with rabies in humans?
I haven't seen that one, but yeah, it's... I've seen some like horrible actual videos of what happens to humans, and it's not really something you want to watch. So don't look that up, please. But it is in animals too. It tends to be that animals can more likely just be stumbling around as if they were intoxicated or something, and not necessarily always foaming at the mouth. But it is a horrible, painful illness. And I don't know. I'm trying to think how they set it up on MASH, because it's almost always fatal if you haven't been treated, but you ever, you know, had the proper treatments after exposure. But they must have had that part of it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember. I think it's the dog bites. They're not sure the dog has rabies. They needed to find the dog.
Yeah.
They had started giving him treatment, and that's kind of what was wearing him out. But they later did find the dog. The dog turned out it didn't have rabies. So the importance of a window of from bite to treatment, does that matter?
It's very short. I think it's a day you have. So a lot of people don't realize that there is occasional death, human death still from rabies, even though it's mostly been resolved. And that's kind of what the story is about, how we really were able to move it out of the dog population almost entirely. And so now they're trying to resolve it in raccoons. But as I was doing the research, I found a story about a woman, I think it was Connecticut, who died just a few years ago. And, you know, they believe she was exposed through either her own cats that were indoor, outdoor, or stray cats she was feeding. And it's crazy to think about, but you imagine them getting in a fight with a raccoon, picking that up, and then they just have to scratch you. And, you know, that could be one day from not being able to stop this disease from killing you. It's crazy to think about.
So you had help, or where was the video from, and did you go out and shoot any of it yourself?
So we had used a little from the East Coast. That was a remote interview And we ended up working with an Ohio PBS affiliate. It's called Western Reserve PBS in Eastern Ohio. And they were wonderful to work with. There happened to be at the time a program. There's a program going on where they drop vaccine bait from airplanes and helicopters. And when I discovered it, I was running out of time to go myself, but found out in time. And the Ohio station was very cooperative, and they ended up sending a team out to film as they're airdropping these basically sugar-coated packets of vaccine for raccoons to find in the woods. So
I found that video to be very interesting, and that's what Western Reserve shot, or was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, okay. Well, actually, inside the airplane was something the federal government had shot. We ran into trouble, like liability. They didn't want us inside the flight and so on.
Has that stopped you before?
No, not so much, but it did this time because I wasn't there. But it worked out really nice because the federal government had shot some of that footage that they let us use from inside the plane, and the Ohio PBS team was able to help add based on the loading on the ground and help us with the interviews remotely and so on. So it worked out really nice.
So Western Reserve PBS in Ohio helped you on that story. And I think you also said another station, or you had other help with remote interviews on that one?
I think that one was all, I had done another Zoom interview and so on. But we've had really nice luck, though, with doing more pairing up, as I kind of referred to that. But lots of, we're starting to do more with working with other states' PBS affiliates. And I think it's working out really nice because I think they like having a little change of pace and, you know, working with a national show, but also showing what they're helping us show more in their states. So I'm hoping, even though maybe we'll be emerging from COVID, that this might continue.
Well, I'd like to thank all the stations that do help us and answer our questions. And we try to give credit at the end. I know Valley PBS in Fresno, Central Valley area has helped us in the past. NET in Nebraska, Wisconsin. We've used various
South Dakota, Colorado, Montana.
There's a few out there, Montana. And then did anybody help you on your labor story?
So labor, I was able to travel, and that was kind of as we were getting permission to travel again. So I headed to Nebraska and South Dakota for that story, and was in a town of Nebraska called Hardington, which is in northeast Nebraska. And so did all that kind of firsthand reporting.
And where is that in the state of Nebraska?
It's in the northeast corner.
Northeast corner, so closer to South Dakota.
Yeah, in fact, and that's why I headed over north into South Dakota and was able to do some interviews for a different story about sunflowers, which we might talk about a bit too. But
so the labor story is one that you have covered before. I know you've gone to parts of Iowa, and I think there was there something to do with Michigan? That's what's popping into my head. Am I remembering correctly?
I had done a story before about labor struggles in agriculture and how the numbers show that a lot of farmers, especially in more labor-intensive crops, were turning toward the H-2A visa program, which is your basically short-term international agricultural worker program, a legal route. And I'd been to Michigan to a tomato farm and also Florida to orange groves for that story. And so this was a mix of like looking at how COVID created maybe even more urgency than we were already facing in agriculture. But also how there's a big push, which I think the dairy industry has been pushing for a long time to allow operations that are not considered seasonal, so year-round operations, which is almost all livestock, to be allowed to hire and bring in from other countries H-2A workers also. That's never been allowed unless you happen to have some part of your operation that's truly seasonal. And dairy has been asking for that a long time, but now some other industries, such as the pork producers, have stepped in to sort of say the same thing. We really need help. So it was that kind of story.
And I think the pork producers have gone out. Do they take an ad out in a newspaper maybe across the country? Was that their campaign? Was part of that going through mainstream media?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I honestly was focused more on doing interviews at the farms. I mentioned the pork producers part of that, but I didn't zero in on what they had done specifically. But it was more of like going to the farms and getting firsthand stories.
And that is, each farm different, or a lot of these farms all kind of, if they have a certain level of production, I'm guessing they have a lot of the same issues.
Yeah, it felt like, I went to, a dairy, it was the Burbacks Countryside Dairy in Hardington, and they were wonderful to work with. They tend to be they supply through to grocery stores in that area, Sioux City, Sioux Falls, I think both, and maybe down to Omaha also, but the glass bottled milk. But they're struggling all the time. They need a lot of labor to keep that work going, milking and in the glass bottling area and so on. But then I could go to, I did go to a sunflower farm that was for a separate story. But while I was there, they were talking about how they were so lucky that they were able to hire an H-2A worker because they're seasonal. And I had a chance to talk with their employee who's from South Africa, and he was super interesting to talk to also.
So we've teased anything else on the labor, otherwise we can get into the sunflower story.
I think the big thing on the labor side is the I feel like this groundswell growing of kind of an urgency. I think a lot of farms have losing money basically on the fact that they just are short of labor. So the one thing that was interesting is a few people, this dairy had found a small solution in that they convinced retired farmers to sort of come back. One in their case, a neighbor who was wanting to retire from full-time farming, but they convinced him to come back a few hours a day, which is not much when you have, 12-hour days, but it was something. And I'll be interested to see if others try that as a solution until there is something bigger to help with this sort of lack of employees available.
And the labor issue is separate from, that was going on prior to all of these restaurants that are putting their signs out that said $200, $2,000, $4,000 bonus and wage increase. Is there any amount of money that's going to be able to lure people in, or is this all about immigration from other countries?
I think for U.S. workers, it's about money because you can, basically you have now choices, especially now after COVID. So I think it got even harder because there's evidence, they can demonstrate that wages went up at farms to try to counteract this, and it's still not necessarily working. So raising the wages hasn't given the answer, which implies it's that the work is demanding and, exposure to weather all the time. Not everybody's willing to do that. And so I think it's a separate issue, and COVID with more opportunities coming up and a lot of people crying for help. There's now more people competing for those, especially in small towns where you have a limited labor pool. So,
labor is not something that's going away anytime soon. At least we record this, and probably the rest of 2021. So the labor issue was already something that was going on. Sunflowers reminds me of other items that people did during COVID to maybe get some people to come in an outdoor setting, open air, not closed air. That's not what your story is it?
No, but we went to a sunflower farm to, talk about the production, but he did mention that I've had a lot of people this year, especially wanting to take pictures in my sunflower field, which I think has always been a senior picture thing, but he said even more this year. I don't know if people just had a little more time and they could do something outdoors. So
they're visually stunning.
Yeah,
I mean, because if you go on a fall day, a nice September day, the sky is blue, the flower has a bright yellow and the brown, it just looks impressive. Whereas a field of corn is all brown unless you pull the ear back and expose, then it's only yellow and brown.
Yeah.
And you need some of that other.
And I have to tell this story because it was the first, I think it was maybe his first, official shoot for our new videographer, Eric Gooden. And I didn't put any pressure on him at all because he's got a new camera. And all I said was, I'm just going to warn you, we haven't been to a sunflower farm since I've been here in 7 years. So no pressure, but this better be good.
How'd he take that?
I was teasing him, but I think he really did feel a little pressure. And it was gorgeous, though. Just like you said, the weather was beautiful, and it was really neat. I really wanted to have enough time there to set up a camera to try to capture a time lapse of the sunflowers turning toward the sun, which I think most people probably know they do that, or follow the sun. I forgot the term for that. But the what I found out from the farmer, which was Ettinger Brothers, near Mitchell, Mount Vernon, I think, is the town, South Dakota. But Charlie had explained that, actually, it's only until a certain point. I think once they develop their seeds, then they no longer turn toward the sun. So that wouldn't have been an option anyway.
But. Well, but it's still an interesting story to tell.
Yeah.
So what else did Charlie have to say?
Well, we talked a lot about just the business of raising sunflowers, but I thought one of the more interesting things, which had never crossed my mind, is that because they don't really have a separate market pricing system, they basically, their pricing for sunflowers follows corn and soybeans. So, you know, essentially as a like competitive deal for what should I plant this year. So the buyers end up paying in line with what's happening in corn and corn and soybeans. So it's just interesting that that's its own sort of, I don't know if you call it a tailcoat market or whatever, but it was interesting.
Well, South Dakota, North Dakota, both of those are known for having more than just two or four crops. They're known for several different ones. Like in North Dakota, producer John Torpy, when he was still a photographer in the field, we came across a flax harvest in North Dakota, and that was not rare. That was common to find stuff like that. Is South Dakota similar?
Yeah, I think it is, and they... I can't think of all the different, I looked at this, what their top crops are, but I do know nationwide for sunflowers for sure, I think they moved into the number one spot, and I'm sorry to the other state, which is either Kansas or North Dakota, if I have that wrong.
Well, Kansas is known as the sunflower state, so yeah. Maybe they're going to have something to say about it.
It's a little embarrassing if you get knocked off, though, when you have the title, but you know, we're the Hawkeye state, and I'm a Cyclone fan, so...
Yeah, how'd that turn out for
you?
Yeah,
not so good. Yeah. Don't talk about that.
So sunflowers, are we talking the seeds that I spit in, chew and spit in baseball, or are these sunflowers for other things?
That's a good point, because there's different varieties, and he happens to grow, these brothers happen to grow the type that is for human consumption and also for bird seed. But there's, and I'm going to have, I can't think of the term right now, I think it's black oil is one kind, and basically there's a distinction between those that are used for oil, you know, cooking oils and so on. So it was, you know, he had said they shifted, and I can't remember right off the top of my head the reason, but basically at some point they shifted from the oil sunflower seeds to the edible.
All right. Anything else on stories that you're working on?
I'm hoping, and maybe if I can't go myself, I'm going to convince Montana's PBS affiliate to help us out.
Again?
Yes. chickpeas are a big crop there. And I had hoped to go a couple of years ago, but it was, again, right before COVID. I think that got thrown off because of hummus gaining popularity. There's been some interesting market things happening there that, I won't get into the whole story, but I think there's an interesting story there if we're able to get that going. And the other, I also want to look at CRP acres. Their federal government's pointed out, and I haven't looked at in the last few weeks, but last time I looked, they were noting that it was the second year of decreased enrollment, and maybe our listeners can tell us what's going on. But I'm really curious about that. You know, is it because, you know, more people are home who maybe weren't around home as much, who had small acres in CRP and are doing something with that now? But it's really interesting to look at that and see that they're actually. It wasn't too long ago, they were actually getting way more requests than they had allowed acres. And now it seems like there's more of a struggle to get acres in.
Well, and there's always a cheering when the amount of CRP acres goes up, at least for the Biden administration. I just saw that release this week. That
yeah.
It was like, oh, we hit this threshold. And because when you have land that is garnering huge commodity prices that we've seen over the last couple of years, there's a big push to put that into production for corn or soybeans or sunflowers or wheat than let sit in CRP.
Yeah, it's but then the flip side to balance that is places like there's a story I did in Missouri, and this is a few years back, about how there are some townships have so much CRP ground because they're hilly, and maybe out-of-state buyers are coming in and buying this, and they have a sort of the way their taxes are set up. It's township based, like what you put in comes back in your road fee or, you know, contribution. And this area had almost no income on this, you know, whole township. And you can see how that can be a concern for an area. Like, how do you balance the benefits of CRP ground with the need to have local economic drivers happen, you know, in place? And I don't really know where the balance is. It's not my job. But
what your job is to tell stories. Yes. And you always are looking for ideas or comments on your stories, and there's an easy way to do that.
That's right. Email is Colleen, C-O-L-L-E-E-N, .Krantz, K-R-A-N-T-Z, at iowapbs.org.
Or you can send an email to market@iowapbs.org, and we'll also get that story to you. So, all right, you think, let me look. I don't see anything else on the list, do you?
The only thing, should I say, I could tell the dates when those other stories ran if they want to go back to the website and check them out.
Or you just go back to the YouTube channel and search for those stories.
Yes, rabies and labor were the,
Rabies and labor. I'd say we'd put those in the comments below, but I don't think that's what we're going to do here on this one. Like, that's what do your kids do that?
Yes.
Rate and review, like, share, ring the bell. I vow not to do that.
Yeah, you just did, though.
Even though I just did.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Colleen, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
That will do it for this installment of the MTOM Show podcast. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you for taking time to listen or watch. We know many of you are watching this on YouTube as well. But if you just want to take us along for the audio, that's cool as well. Drop us an email at markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Thank you so very much for your comments, your ratings, your shares, your comments in the where you get your podcasts. And we'll hopefully act on what it is that you send us. Thanks for watching.
Moody's Analytics will host its second annual Ag Day virtual conference dedicated to the discussion of agriculture. Ag lending professionals come together for 2 days of peer sharing, best practice concepts, and critical insight into agriculture's road ahead. Learn more at moodysanalytics.com/Moody's Ag Day 2021.